A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Everybody counting us out. I think we should call it like NRG versus the world, you know, or Houston versus the world.
Collins got good blocking. Collins has the corner, and he finds it. Touchdown, Houston. What a response. Fires downfield. Excellent touch. Perfectly delivered. Touchdown, Dalton Schultz. Stroud strikes again for 37 yards.
This one goes to Brevin Jordan, the tight end. Makes a man miss, and then shows off the speed. Jordan, pedal to the metal. He's gone. Touchdown, Texans. 76 yards. It picked off. Steven Nelson takes it away, and he's looking to go the other way. Nelson has a convoy down the sideline. Touchdown.
We were rocking, like, the whole, like, it was loud. That was probably the loudest I've heard a stadium in my life.
Picked off again. Christian Harris. It's going to go. Houston, you have no problem.
You dominate. You dominate a really good football team. And we earned it.
Y'all know what time it is. Texans Swarm!
Texans Swarm indeed. Hello and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Martin Luther King Day, January 15th, and your Houston Texans are on to the second round of the playoffs after a blowout, a massacre, 45-14 victory over the Cleveland Browns. It's a game that I saw in person, and without a doubt, the most fun I've had, and the most fun probably anyone has had, watching the Houston Texans at NRG Stadium. By far. Not even close. It feels right now like it's 2011, 2012, when this city actually did love this team. It's because of C.J. Stroud. It's because of D'Amico Ryans. It's because of an offense that is still making big plays despite not having Tank Dell. It's because of a defense that is obviously getting contributions from the guy they drafted third overall, Will Anderson, but had big performances Saturday by Derek Stingley, by Derek Barnett, by Christian Harris, by Steven Nelson. And we're going to have some fun today, because they're on to the second round of the playoffs. You want to jump in? Floor is yours all morning, afternoon long. 713-780-3776 to call. It's also how you text. You can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. I suppose we got to start with the quarterback. What a performance by C.J. Stroud. I mean, he opened the game with a drive that was rather frustrating, right? They're moving down the field. It's first down. Stroud has a wide open Dalton Schultz. Hits Schultz right in the hands. He drops it, and you're like, okay, well, hopefully they don't make a lot of penalties in this game like they've been doing the last couple of games, because that's not a great way to start things off against a Browns team that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to make mistakes these days. And then the next drive, they move down the field. Stroud has that awesome throw to Nico Collins, but it was more of a great play by Nico Collins to come back to the football, make the diving catch. They're in the red zone. You're thinking, okay, here comes the touchdown, but they're only able to get a field goal there. So you're thinking to yourself, damn, what's going to happen now? Especially considering on that drive, the Cleveland Browns did whatever they wanted. Steven Nelson is matched up with David Njoku, who's been arguably the best tight end in the NFL this year, especially with Travis Kelce perhaps distracted. They score 7-3, and you're thinking, oh no, Flacco is just going to keep throwing it to tight ends. This is going to be an easy game. But the Texans march back down the field. Bobby Slowick shows some creativity in the play calling. They have a nice sweep to Devin Singletary to the left, to the right of the field. The next play, John Metchie makes a beautiful catch down the right sideline. Probably John Metchie's best game as a Houston Texan. And then, thanks to that toss sweep to Singletary, they fake another toss sweep to the right to Singletary. They throw it back to Nico Collins, who catches the pass, takes it into the house. And after that, the Browns answered again. It's another rando tight end. This time, some white guy I'd never heard of who has a nice catch and run. You guys all know my history with Bill O'Brien when it comes to white tight ends at NRG Stadium. I'm sorry. It's too far away. I have no idea who that guy was. But the Browns answered, and from that point on, the Texans just turned on the gas. And, Sean, I don't know if you can play this audio, but I feel more and more like C.J. Stroud is my, not just friend, but my brother. Stroud number 19. Did you know what C.J. Stroud watched before Saturday night's game? Here's what he watched.
Just real quick, what movie did you watch this morning?
What did I watch? I don't remember. I know I watched Fast Five last night. Yeah, I just put it in like background.
Well, hang on, you never do it in the background. Fast Five. That's the best Fast and Furious movie. But they hit the nitros right there. They took off. C.J. Stroud to Brevin Jordan, 76 yards. I have no idea how Jordan got that loose. And at one point, it looked like a bunch of Browns defenders were running off the sideline to try and make the tackle. It was because they all over-pursued and they ran out of bounds. So Jordan scores on a 76-yard touchdown. Next drive, Stroud, bootleg to his right, throws it back all the way across the field to Dalton Schultz for another touchdown, 37 yards. Going into halftime, it's 24-14, and all you're thinking is, okay, the defense has just got to do something, and this game might be out of hand. And that's what happened in the second half. Derek Barnett has a beautiful sack, almost, of Joe Flacco, and Flacco, for whatever reason, decides to just throw the ball straight up in the air. It was essentially a punt to Steven Nelson, who had a convoy of blockers in front of him down the right sideline. 82 yards, touchdown. NRG Stadium lost its effing mind in that moment. And I don't know if they were a little more amped up from what happened at halftime. You had Slim Doug, you had Paul Wall, you had Still Tippin. I mean, everyone was pretty rowdy from the second half on. Then you get the Christian Harris pick six. And I think my favorite moment of this game was before the Texans kicked the ball off to the Cleveland Browns, up 38-14 at this moment. Somebody at NRG Stadium decided to play Don't Stop Believing by Journey. And everybody that was in attendance took out their cell phones, turned on the flashlight, and was waving it back and forth. I've never wanted a commercial break to continue more than I did, because they got about two-thirds through Don't Stop Believing by Journey. And I had goosebumps. I was pissed that the press box that we're trapped in, we the members of the liberal media, I was pissed that they wouldn't open up the plexiglass so we could hear it, so we could be a part of it. We could hear it through said plexiglass, but I wanted to be a part of it. I don't know if you guys saw my live stream after the game on my own YouTube channel, but I said, yeah, I was jealous of all the fans there. I wanted to go get crunk. I wanted to do hood rat bleep with my friends, because you're my friends. We are all friends. We are all Texans. Hashtag we are Texans. Sean Mapes, for you, Saturday night. What was your experience like?
I watched the game over at Jake's sports bar around the corner here on Chimney Rock with Brian McDonald and Joe George, because Joe and I were doing the post-game show with Michael Connor that you heard on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. And yeah, it was a crazy – you could tell – even just through like the sports bar audio of a broadcast, sometimes it's hard to tell the environment of a game. It was not hard to tell the environment of NRG Stadium, especially once they started pulling away in the third quarter. It was at first, the first half was like a Big 12 football game where it was just points, 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 back and forth. Whenever there's a field goal, you're like, that was a stop. And then from that point on, it was all systems go, I guess, especially the second, the Christian Harris pick six is where it's like the roof blew off the play.
It was fourth and two. The Browns were desperate at this moment in time. And yeah, that was the moment in the game where it was done. It was completely over from there out. And yeah, roof blew off. And the best part about it, in the fourth quarter, like, I didn't have to pay attention. You know, I could go have some treats and snacks in the press box.
Yeah, I once Davis Mills was out there, that was Joe and I's cue to be like, okay, I think now we can leave. Because we're talking about, like, when should we leave so we don't miss, like, that as little action as possible, even though it's, like, 2 minutes away. But and then we saw Davis Mills. We're like, I think we're safe. I think at this point we can leave.
Okay. So there you go, guys. Texans win 45-14. You want to jump in, 713-780-3776 is how you call in. It's also how you text in. We're getting some texts. One text, this person was in the stadium. I heard that Browns fans were getting barked at by Texans fans. After the back-to-back pick sixes, Texans fans were looking for any Browns fan they could and barking. That's A-plus trolling. We can troll again because we have a good quarterback here. And a good coach here. What a world. More texts. Thought it was going to be a real close game at first from the 832. I did as well. And another text. I just wanted to give Brevin Jordan a shout out for that touchdown. That was all him. I was impressed by the speed. I was too. I didn't know he had a horse like that. I don't know what the Browns defenders were doing. Really, that was, of all the plays that the Browns screwed up on, including the two Joe Flacco pick sixes, that's the play where I truly do not know what the hell they were doing. Like, three Brown defenders just ran out of bounds. Whoops! Brevin Jordan just ran straight down the middle, the hash marks, because of how wide open he was, because those Browns defenders ran out of bounds. You want to jump in, you know how to do it on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. It's the Paul Gallant Show. Stick around.
97.5, because every day is Children's Day.
It was a baby. She smothered her own baby.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
And the big run to set this up. What could be the final play of this first quarter? Fake the pitch, find Collins, got good blocking. Collins has the corner, and he finds it. Touchdown, Houston. What a response.
Watch number 78. We've seen him go one-on-one against Garrett and pass block. Shows block, then he gets out in front of this play and gets the block on the corner, Newsom, or Emerson, and Nico Collins follows him into the end zone.
You're welcome for the free money. I did tell you, hit the over, Nico Collins, 73.5. He had it at the end of the first quarter. It was that quick. Also liked hearing the color commentary, giving a shout out to Laramie Tunsil, because we're going to talk a lot about C.J. Stroud and the defense today. But Laramie Tunsil held Myles Garrett sackless. And honestly, what did Myles Garrett do Saturday night other than try to assault Kyeemi Fairbairn? Did he do anything? Seriously, I don't remember him being on the field. And that's an all-pro defensive lineman. Maybe Laramie Tunsil did indeed take his all-pro snub personally. Paul Gallant Show, most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Somebody asked on the text line at 713-780-3776, who would you rather the Texans play? Would you rather see them take on the Kansas City Chiefs, or would you rather see them take on the Baltimore Ravens? We will figure out who they play after today's early NFL game. Bills and Steelers was postponed. We talked about that last week, how there were some rumors about potentially moving the game to Cleveland. Well, due to a winter storm watch warning of 65 mile per hour wind gusts and over a foot of snow, New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced that Sunday's early game between the Bills and Steelers would be postponed to this afternoon.
And full travel advisory in effect. The ban goes into effect at 9 p.m. tonight. The Buffalo Bills game will be relocated to Highmark Stadium at 4:30 on Monday. And I'd like, with that information, I'd like to turn it over to County Executive Mark Poling.
So there you go. That's the announcement. And it's interesting that she made that announcement also because, first off, I thought Buffalo was built for this, right? I mean, isn't Buffalo a city that loves the snow, loves the cold, Sean? I thought that this is basically what Buffalo wanted more than anything, a playoff game in a foot of snow.
It also, they had a game relocated last year to Detroit. They played a game in Detroit, a home game in Detroit. Yeah, I mean, if your city cannot handle, like, having this kind of weather for games, like, it becomes kind of hard to argue, like, what's the point of having a team in Buffalo? Like, if they can't, like, play during the weather that happens all the time during football season.
Yeah. It's their God-given home field advantage.
And, like, if it's because of the roads, I mean, it's just like, well, get better roads. like
Sean,
what are we talking about here?
I went to college in Syracuse, New York. It's a smaller city. It snows more in Syracuse than any city in the United States of America. Guess what is never an issue in Syracuse, New York? The roads.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo is a bigger city. Buffalo is on the lake. Buffalo knows what snow is. They should be prepared for this. And I get it. Oh, 65 mile per hour winds. Oh, a foot of snow. I'm sorry, but you know who played football in the snow every single Saturday, a foot of it? At college, Paul Gallant played tackle pickup football every single Saturday during the winter at Syracuse. Did not matter how deep the snow was. We were playing tackle football out in the snow. Oh, the NFL can't handle this? And they've done this back-to-back years? How can I take New York seriously as a state? How can I take them seriously as a state? How can anyone take them seriously as a state? Two of the teams that are named New York can't even afford to play in New York City because Manhattan real estate is too pricey for some billionaires. And the team that plays in the cold place that snows can't even play in the cold place that snows back-to-back years. And did you see this from Kathy Hochul, who gave this advice to Steelers fans who might be trying to make the trek to the game as well?
One final bit of advice. And this one's for our friends who's thinking about traveling from Pittsburgh to watch the game. We think it's just better if you stay home and tune in on television. It'll be safer for all of us. It's going to be a rough game for you anyhow. So stay tuned. We'll look forward to giving you more reports starting at noon tomorrow. But again, this is a major storm to take.
You can't talk trash if you're not even hosting the game the day it's supposed to be played. You're talking trash to Steelers fans. You know what? Never thought that I would be allied with Steelers fans here, but I hope the Steelers kick the absolute bejesus out of the Buffalo Bills, mainly because play the game outside. There were Bills fans shoveling snow out of the stadium shirtless, looking like they were having the time of their lives. Bills fans wanted this. I had a friend who's a Bills fan who I was giving grief to because they weren't playing this game pull the, well, 50 people died in a winter storm last year card. So I pulled out the, yeah, and I bet they were all Bills fans and wished that they would be at tailgating and setting tables on fire and blasting through them in the parking lot before this game. They're rolling over in their graves right now. They wanted this game to be played. I am rooting for the Steelers here. And the other reason is because if the Steelers win this game, the Steelers will be the lowest seed remaining, and they will play the Baltimore Ravens. I think I want the Chiefs, and maybe I'm crazy on this front, and honestly, I've been going back and forth about this because the Texans played the Ravens earlier in the year, and the Ravens handled them, but the Texans did a really good job against Lamar Jackson in that game. And you would think that C.J. Stroud from week one of this season to where he's at now, that's a totally different player that we're talking about. He's improved as the season's gone. And you would think that even though it was a week one game, the Texans have a pretty good feel for what the Ravens optimally want to do with Lamar Jackson based off of that game. So maybe the Ravens for some are the better matchup. And honestly, I feel like conventional wisdom says they are the better matchup, but even though Kansas City smoked the candy-ass Dolphins on Peacock on Saturday after the Texans game went down, I just am having a difficult time buying into Kansas City's offense. And I don't know how much stock you can take from that game at all when it comes to the Chiefs, other than shout out to Andy Reid's mustache for being built cold tough. Like, that thing was frozen from snot, I would imagine. You know, it's got to be gross. Like, you got mucus dripping in your beard and mustache, and then it freezes. You've got a mustache-sicle. Not ideal. But I just go back to what the Chiefs have been this regular season as opposed to what the Chiefs were on Saturday. And I don't like that Chiefs defense. I think it's good. I think it will give the Texans some problems. But wasn't the Browns defense supposed to be one of the best in the NFL? I guess the cold could be a difference, and it's going to be cold either in Baltimore or in Kansas City next weekend. I guess that could potentially be something that you're looking for. Maybe you want it to be 32 degrees instead of 20 degrees or something, Sean.
Yeah, I was in my head, I'm racking my brain of like the what we saw on Saturday night in KC. Have we ever seen that in Baltimore in all these playoff games?
I don't think Baltimore
gets that terrible. So that is my answer, is just whichever has the best weather. Just that I'm not going to this game. It really shouldn't matter. But just for CJ Stroud winging the thing all over the field, like I want it in a dome. Can either of these places build a dome in the next week?
Oh no, we can't be dome people. I'm sorry. I do not.
NRG Stadium's literally dome.
Yeah, open the roof. Today, if they played the game today, they should open the roof. It's kind of snowing. Like, you can see the snow, but it's not staying on the ground. Open the roof. I hate domes. I think it's a symptom of the wussification of America. The Bills are soft for not being able to play that game in the outdoors, and we don't need more domes. And look, I'm from the North. Northern NFL culture is different from Southern, largely college football culture. No. So I've seen some people pushing for the idea that, like, hey, like, this isn't how football is supposed to be played. Yeah, it is. If you want to further celebrate the toughness of the guys who were playing, having them play in the elements is a way to do it. And yeah, oh no, it makes the game a little bit different. Football's not supposed to be this effing arcade that all these loser little Gen Zers want.
Oh, I want fireworks. I don't want any tackling. I play flag football. I've never played tackle football because my mom won't let me.
No, toxic masculinity. Playing in the cold. Playing through concussions. We need that. And I will bang my fist emphatically on the table. Domes are terrible. They're bad. And everybody should be forced to get rid of their dome. How about that, Sean? How about that? You know what was cool?
I imagine that the atmosphere at NRG Stadium would be way worse if it was a whole bunch of Texans that are having to stand in 40-degree weather.
No, it would have been better.
It would have been
worse. I would have taught everybody what to do.
From the press box.
I would have taught them what to do.
I don't think people's phones would be out doing Don't Stop Believing in the third quarter.
I think they would.
I think they would have left because they're like, we're up 20.
Come on.
We're good.
You bring in a flask, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I'm just imagining, like, again, people today having to stand outside.
Not optimal.
Yeah, let me tell you, Arrowhead Stadium sounded real quiet on Saturday night compared to NRG Stadium. And that's kind of the opposite reputations for both these stadiums.
From the 832 bleep opinion, look how bleeping boring the Chiefs-Dolphins game was. I couldn't watch it. So, not my problem.
It was not good.
I'm sure it was a celebration of toxic masculinity and manliness. Okay? I'm sorry. Some of you guys are just soft. It's fine. Like, you're not all built like Shorecrest Preparatory School, legendary safety at 1A level of Florida high school football, Paul Gallant.
How many freezing games did Shorecrest Preparatory play in?
One time we played in a hurricane.
That wasn't my answer. Didn't answer the question.
One time we played in a hurricane, but did you not just hear about Syracuse Saturday afternoon tackle football without any pads legend Paul Gallant? Because he would play in the snow
all
the time. Wow,
you're lowering the shoulder against Bob Costas Jr. Wow.
Yeah.
Very, very impressive.
I would have run over Noah Eagle, especially after he dropped that. Houston, we have a problem in the middle of the Christian Harris
pick six. Because they didn't have a problem.
They did have a problem. What are you talking about?
Noah. God, you didn't need to do that.
It's like it's one of my least favorite. Not just the Houston we have a problem, but also the. I mean, it happens at radio all the time where it's like you're trying to like have a segue, but your segue is, you know who's not upset right now is XYZ. I'm like, that's not a segue. Right. You can't use the opposite for a segue.
When you do it, unironically, you look like the worst. Like, we do these transitions ironically because we're idiots. Like, we have fun on this show and we don't take ourselves seriously.
Even then, I try not to go like, you know, we're it was a bad weekend for the Browns. You know who didn't have a bad weekend? CJ Stroud. It's like, that's nothing. That's not a segue.
Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. We're celebrating the Texans' 45-14 win over the Browns Saturday night. The win wasn't just awesome because the Texans are on to the divisional round of the playoffs for the fifth time in franchise history. There was another perk of winning on Saturday. We'll tell you what that is and recap what happened to the Cowboys yesterday. Oh, boy. Paul Galacho, stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Pump it up.
Come on, Digna. It's too small for the both of us.
No, it isn't. Jump on, man. I'll give you a pump.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush.
Tackling the biggest issues in the NFL.
This just in.
Here's the 10-minute drill with Paul Gallant.
Football time.
They're on it. Flacco dials it up. Picked off again. Christian Harris. It's going to go. Back-to-back pick sixes. Houston, you have no problem with this defense.
I hate Syracuse people. I went to Syracuse. I hate Syracuse people. It's Noah Eagle on the call. He's like 22. Definitely has this job calling NFL playoff games due to nepotism. Whatever. That's the way the world works. But my friend, my fellow orange man, I'm sorry, sir. No. You do not get to do that. No one gets to do that. No one wants to hear that.
I thought he was mostly fine, but, you know, in the playoffs, we talk about rookie mistakes and young players, you know, messing up in the biggest moments.
I mean, that's like Joe Flacco throwing the interception to Steven Nelson.
Yes, a classic young player, Joe Flacco.
Mistake. Yep, you can't do that. You can't do that to us. You can't. And I get it. It wasn't him saying Houston has a problem with, I don't know, like a three and out or a CJ Stroud interception. It was in a good moment for the Texans, but I'm sorry. If he came out of that call, like with a beaming smile on his face, proud about that, like the fart that he just left on the NBC broadcast, for Houstonians at least, I just don't want to recognize his Syracuse diploma.
I would recognize a Syracuse diploma no matter what. But I don't think it's my place to pull his card like that. As someone who only went to lowly Texas.
That's true. At least you acknowledge.
Yes. But yeah, definitely not an ivory tower school, Texas. I do think though I would respect it more if the Texans had the Cowboys game and he dropped to Houston, you have a problem. Like that, I'm like, at least you're using it right. Again, when you're not using it right, there's no reason to use it. It's
exactly.
So stupid.
Exactly. Oh boy, it makes me glad that we will have Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call for whoever the Texans play on Saturday. The game is, again, the early Saturday afternoon game. It'll either be in Kansas City. That's if it'll be in Kansas City or in Baltimore. It'll be in Baltimore if the Steelers win, and it'll be in Kansas City if the Bills win.
Don't you think it's a little bit disrespectful that they're like, no matter who the Texans play, they have to be a Saturday afternoon?
Yeah.
They're just like, it could be Patrick effing Mahomes and Travis Kelce. We're not putting them in primetime.
I just did that backwards, by the way, too. I'm so dumb with this stuff. Again.
Like, yes. If the Steelers win, they play the Steelers would play Baltimore, so the
correct.
Texans
so the would Texans play would play. If the Steelers win, the Texans play the Chiefs. If the Bills win, the Texans play the Ravens. There you go. Nailed it this time around.
Noah Eagle's probably looking at me like, this guy went to Syracuse. Shut up, Noah. Stop bullying me. Anyway, hey.
The idea of Noah Eagle bullying. Bullying anyone.
Bullying a high school football legend, especially. Yeah, absolutely outrageous. Okay, the other games that took place. Sean, I'm sure you got to watch a little bit more of this, and I know we were doing our post-game show here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Yeah, I caught the second half of this game.
I saw absolutely none of this game. I went into it assuming the Dolphins are going to get destroyed because the weather's too cold and the Dolphins wear candy-ass uniforms. And I think I was right.
Yeah. What I'll say is Tua definitely looked like a quarterback who's from Hawaii. Playing in negative 22 degree weather. Like, every throw just seemed like he was throwing like a boulder. It was tough. The Chiefs, again, they just look like a cold weather team it actually helps that they're less kind of pass happy and big pew pew explosives, in the words of Jonathan Gannon. That they can't, they were comfortable just playing a game where they score 26 points.
Right. Mahomes was close to 50% completion percentage, and he had two big scrambles in this game that I think were really the biggest offense for Kansas City. But Kansas City's a tough team. I still feel like between Baltimore and Kansas City, with the way Kansas City's offense has not been working this year, I think I want Kansas City over Baltimore. And I know the Texans did a great job against Lamar Jackson last time around, but I feel like the next time that Baltimore will have a different game plan for what the Texans were throwing at them. Where with Kansas City, like, this is the first time they see you, you see them, and I think that helps the Texans out a bit.
I mean, even playing in like week one with a rookie head coach, first time offensive coordinator.
It was a respectable loss despite the score, yes.
I'm not sure how much of week one transfers to, 18 weeks later, 19 weeks later?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Good news is, Kansas City, it's going to be a high of 16 degrees on Saturday right now.
Well, it's afternoon.
Not too windy.
There'll be some sunlight, perhaps.
Yes.
So, for a little bit.
Partly sunny.
For like 10 minutes.
That's what's really sad. It's partly sunny in 16 degrees. Right. And it's supposed to rain basically all of next week. So,
oh boy.
We better hope that storm system doesn't, was able to hold off a little bit, but more than likely they're playing in Baltimore, I guess, right?
Yeah,
the Bills are 10-point favorites.
Yeah. The Cowboys got smoked yesterday. I'm shocked by how badly they lost. I'll be also shocked if Mike McCarthy isn't fired. And I said it before, Belichick, next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Talked to a couple of people yesterday, and they said, Belichick's retired. No. Belichick hates dead Don Shula, who once disparaged him for the Spygate stuff. No matter whether you agree or disagree with Belichick, Belichick hates Shula and wants to have the all-time coaching wins record in the NFL. And if you think he's going to go to some mark-ass franchise like the Titans or the Falcons to do it, you got another thing coming. If he wants a job, it's going to be the Cowboys or Eagles, depending on what they do against the Buccaneers later today. The Cowboys should go and get Bill Belichick right now. This was a classic Cowboys just looking asleep on arrival. Jordan Love does that to you in the first half. Like, I think we've all changed our opinion on Jordan Love a bit this season, but are we acting like Jordan Love's a top 10 quarterback? Love looked like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL yesterday against that Cowboys defense, which was supposedly one of the best in the league.
He's looked really good a lot recently, basically starting with the Thanksgiving game against the Lions, where he just was shoving.
He was great in that game, right?
Yes, and he's been pretty good since then, but I mean, he was thrown to guys that are wide. He threw to a tight end where it was basically like a pop-up. The tight end caught it, turned all the way back around and ran into the end zone. That's how open he was. There's no one even close to, I forgot whichever white tight end he was throwing to, but I think it was Musgrave maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But the Cowboys just totally unprepared for a game today.
Vintage
yesterday.
McCarthy, 3 1-and-dones now.
Classic McCarthyism.
Yeah. Minus the throwing people in jail, but Mike McCarthy might be thrown to the street, and I wonder if Dak would follow him.
After the game, he did say, if you're talking about Mike McCarthy's being on a hot seat, you got to talk about me being on a hot seat, too. And
well,
let me
you
tell
are,
you,
Dak.
Let me tell you, Dak Prescott, no problem.
We're going to make fun of the Cowboys a lot more tomorrow because the meltdowns that I've seen from Cowboys ex-players, ex-coaches. Did you see Jimmy Johnson's halftime rant? What are you doing, dude?
As it was happening, I was like, what is happening
He
right
was
now?
Yelling at my TV like it was Bill O'Reilly ranting about how like all the immigrants are ruining our country. I was like, yeah, Jesus, dude, calm down.
He's giving the Pacino inches speech like to America. It's crazy.
Oh, boy. And the Lions, shout out to the Detroit Lions. They get their first playoff win since over the Dallas Cowboys. January 5th of 1992, a 24-23 win over the Rams. It was interesting hearing Matt Stafford go out of his way to not credit Lions fans after the game. He was asked about like what it means to be back in Detroit, and he talked about the Detroit players, which he's been gone from the Lions for a while, so there's not that many Lions that he played with still in Detroit anymore. And for whatever reason, it was interesting, I thought, in this rematch of two quarterbacks who did a QB swap. I'm happy for the Lions. I'm happy for Dan Campbell. And as I said last week, I think the most rootable teams in the NFL for the average person in the United States are the Lions and the Texans. Things could potentially change if both of those teams start winning or if they stop winning and then they become easy to call frauds. But for now, I'm happy for the Lions. They are our NFC bros. How about that? Built for tough, the Motor City. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to call in or text in 713-780-3776. You can also join on YouTube, youtube.com. Oh, no, not quite yet. Okay. Well, hey, eventually you can join on YouTube. Twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. Coming up next, we're the unsung heroes of the Houston Texans victory Saturday night. I'll give them to you. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 on YouTube. Dog Show.
How much weight do you think I could bench press? Just make a guess. Ballpark figure.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's your host, former Shorecrest Preparatory All-District Safety, Paul Gallant.
Flacco. Pressure comes, gets rid of it. It's picked off. Steven Nelson takes it away, and he's looking to go the other way. Nelson has a convoy down the sideline. Touchdown.
When that play happened, the game was over. But I had a difficult time doing what I normally do when the Texans have clinched a victory, which is to tweet out, blouses, bro. Usually a gif of Dave Chappelle as Prince in the True Hollywood Stories by Charlie Murphy skit from Chappelle's Show back in the day. What a great show that was. The best sketch comedy show of all time. I was nervous to do it. And then, Sean, we both saw this. And you had a great tweet about it. Of course, the general, John McClain, has to say, hey, don't get too excited. Remember, 35-3 Oilers Bills. John, I like you, man. But with all due respect, shut the F up. Just shut up. You don't need to troll when things are going good. You don't. That was uncalled for. I wanted to be excited and have not a care in the world. Don't tell me about something that happened in 1992. Don't do that to me. Not cool. Ugh. I'm still upset that he tweeted that out, Sean.
I mean, it's just so, it's like, it's the Skip Bayless throwing a Dak jersey in the trash during a Cowboys game, which, don't worry, folks. He did that. But it's that for Houston's, like, on a much smaller scale, obviously, but for Houston sports media, is like, here's John McClain. Like, it would be one thing. It'd be one thing if the score was 35-3, or if there was like some tie other than Bruce Matthews is sitting with the McNair family. Like, it's just such a for 99% of people, he could just be making that up. Like, no one knows that he's doing that.
Right, Sean. He posted that Bruce Matthews is sitting with his family in a box. The last time he saw a Houston sports team with a lead like this, his Oilers blew a lead to the Bills. Yeah, give or take.
He said, I guarantee you Buffalo has crossed his mind. Oilers blew 35-3 lead in the wild card in 92.
Sean, that wasn't the only time he put that out there, though. He did it again a little bit later. There are multiple moments where John McClain decided to bring up Oilers-Bills. Dude, totally different franchises. Just stop with this. The Astros have won 2 World Series, been to 4, have been to 7 straight ALCS. The bad juju thing and the Houston concern about bad things happening, it is a thing of the past. It can be in the back of your mind, but don't bring it back up to us, especially with this team. So, John McClain, not an unsung hero from Saturday. Nope,
no,
not him.
Sung villain.
Sung villain, yes, because he's singing the song of a villain. Anyway, I want to talk about some of those unsung heroes. A lot of people are going to point to the Brevin Jordan touchdown as the moment where the Texans won this game. And yeah, that's where they took the lead and they never looked back. But for me, the moment where this game was won came after the Brevin Jordan touchdown. And it was 2 Texans defenders who had been having a very good season, but we don't talk about as much as Will Anderson and Derek Stingley, on back-to-back plays that forced a Browns 3-and-out after back-to-back drives where Cleveland did whatever it wanted with those throws that were for big catch and runs to tight ends. The first play, a huge tackle for a loss by Christian Harris, who had a great game. It was very funny to go into the locker room after the game and see a note on both Brevin Jordan and Christian Harris's lockers about how they're going to get randomly, in quotation marks, drug tested by the NFL. But I kind of got it with Harris. I even told him afterwards. I was like, dude, you were throwing people. And so he throws a guy for a tackle for a loss, Sean.
I get it with Jordan, too. He ran track speed.
It's the fastest we've ever seen him run.
You know what? Both of them? You know what? Good job, Roger Goodell. I like to think that he personally walked into the Texans locker room and dropped the envelopes in their locker room.
By the way, I forgot to say this on Friday. I was thinking about, like, what's the most passive-aggressive but I won't get in trouble thing I can do with Roger Goodell? And it was between staring him down or crop-dusting him as walking by. But I didn't see him in the press box. I didn't see him, but I was thinking it.
He didn't stop by to shake hands.
If I saw Goodell, I would have stared him down. Like, for besmirching Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and railroading the Patriots, I would have 100% stared Goodell down. 100%. Sorry. A masshole never stops being a masshole, even if he's jumped on a Houston Texans bandwagon.
Yes, even though he's wearing a Texans sweater, bad red sunglasses,
today,
and a cowboy hat.
Yeah, today, it's a different world. The Texans won a playoff game by a lot. It was the most fun we've ever had at NRG Stadium, ever! But to go back to that back-to-back sequence, Christian Harris has this tackle for a loss, and then it's Derek Barnett who gets the first sack of the game. The Texans only sacked Joe Flacco once in the first game between these two teams on Christmas Eve. Derek Barnett, they found this guy. The Eagles cut him. Don't you wonder why the Eagles cut him? He's been really good, and the Eagles' defense has been very disappointing despite all the talent that they have. I suppose maybe it was a matter of they have too many good players on defense to get everybody on the field, but with the way that they're playing, Sean's making a face right now. Yeah, I mean, you can't really make that argument. So Barnett comes in, and he does that. Barnett's the guy who hits Joe Flacco as he throws that pick 6 to Steven Nelson. Derek Barnett's been awesome. So I asked after the game both Will Anderson and Christian Harris about Barnett and what he's brought to the table since joining the team.
Man, he's solid, and he'll just go out there and wreck anything, man. And he's been a great addition to our room, man. Very knowledgeable, knows a lot about ball, man. He's silent, but like when he steps on the field, you know he's out there, man. And we're so appreciative to have him. He's been a great vet for all of us.
Been a dog, doing his job, dominating every single time he gets in there. And, you know, I mean, we're very appreciative of that. So,
Anderson called him a warrior. And it was really awesome to see Barnett be able to do this after the Eagles cast him to the side. And much like on the opposite end of the spectrum, Brandon Cooks, former Texans wide receiver, is probably sitting at home pissed off that he's not playing for this Texans offense. Imagine how good this offense could theoretically be if Brandon Cooks was engaged in playing in it. On the other side of things, Derek Barnett, who was with the Eagles, he joins the Texans, and, I mean, he's been really good. Warrior, stone cold killer, per Will Anderson. Other unsung heroes, we mentioned Laremy Tunsil earlier in the show. Myles Garrett didn't do a damn thing against him. And while Tunsil may have been guilty of a couple of false starts that actually weren't called, hey, totally understandable when you're going up against Myles Garrett. Totally understandable. He did a great job. And was it because he was pissed off that he wasn't first team All-Pro or second team All-Pro and Myles Garrett was? It's a great way to show it. It's not going to get the same kind of memories that what Hakeem Olajuwon did to David Robinson after Robinson won the MVP well. But for the real ones out there, I think we should all remember this Laremy Tunsil performance. It was a hell of a performance.
Yeah, real ball knowers will sit around 25 years from now and be like, it's like Hakeem Olajuwon against David Robinson or Laremy Tunsil against Myles Garrett, who, by the way, I saw the stat after the game. He has like one sack in his last seven games. He's like kind of falling off falling off a cliff. It's one of those where it's like, I wish I saw this stat before the game. I would have felt way better about this. Why are we hoarding stats?
Weird.
It was from a Steelers fan being like, TJ Watt should win Defensive Player of the Year because whatever. I'm like, okay. TJ Watt also missed games, so he also had a couple zero-sack games.
It's an interesting place to be, and we'll talk about the NFL awards a little bit later. Do you want to fight the battle that you have no actual say in? Or do you just sit back, let it happen, and try to not care about the awards? It's a difficult place to be if you're somebody who talks about sports for a living. More unsung heroes. Bobby Slowick. I thought there were two moments in this game that Bobby Slowick did a great job of setting up future plays. And I really think that, especially in the first half, I mean, C.J. Stroud set the rookie record for passing yards and touchdown passes in a playoff game in the first half with 236-3. And the Texans averaged 10.6 yards per play in the first half. The Texans offense didn't need to do anything in the second half because of all those pick sixes. They were off the field for like 10 minutes at one point. And then when they get back out there, Devin Singletary and the running game started to purr, and they scored that last touchdown to make it 45-14. Derek Stingley Jr., unsung hero, because we never saw him get tested. But when he was covering Amari Cooper, which he was doing 80% of the game, they actually, for a change, decided, hey, we're going to have Derek Stingley follow Amari Cooper across the field. We were all calling for that. We were wondering why they don't do that. Stingley doing that worked out really, really well. When Stingley was matched up against Cooper, he erased him. The NRG Stadium scoreboard operator and the DJ for one, starting a Texans swarm chant. Houston Texans, one side of the stadium versus the other. Not nearly as cool as Texans swarm. Not nearly as cool. And you know what? We made fun of swarm at the beginning of the year. I'm all in on swarm, baby. I'm all in on swarm. Scoreboard operator with the old school Houston street signs that they're using with the light blue that they put up there for like first down and touchdown. Hell yeah to you. Scoreboard operator, the DJ playing Don't Stop Believing by Journey. I know someone was saying, well, the White Sox used that because the Astros back in 2005. Only you remember that, I guess. But you could co-op something when it's been 20 years, okay? And it's a different sport.
My thing, and Michael Connor and I talked about it after the post-game show, it's a little bit of like, kind of wish we had our own thing. That's kind of like what every, like, that's like such a, like, classic song that it's like, that every sports venue uses.
But
so
not
like,
everybody, Sean, pulls out their phones and starts waving back and forth with the flashlight.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that to a different song.
You can do it to any song, you're right. But hey, that natural moment happened, so now it's a thing. It has to be a thing going forward.
Okay.
This is the song that they have to play when you feel like the Texans have it in the bag.
Oh, okay. For
no one cares about this, but Patriots games, when they think the game is over, and that doesn't happen anymore, but they would play Your Love by The Outfield as soon as they thought that the game was in hand. That was their, like, it's over, suck it.
You know, in 1992, the Houston Oilers played played a song when they're up 38-3 against the. Or
luckily, they were in Buffalo, so like that. Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
You know what? John McClane would have known where that game was played.
The last unsung hero, and I mean, this is 100% pandering. I do not care. The crowd. You guys were great. It was loud as hell. You could hear it on TV. You could really hear it in person. And I'm just happy that people care again, truly. It's been a long time for a lot of Texans fans out there, no doubt about it. And to go out there as excited and as loud, it was huge. It's a shame that it is very unlikely for there to be another playoff game this year. Basically, the Steelers have to make it to the AFC Championship game with Mason Rudolph. That's not effing happening. It's not happening. It has to be the Steelers. Sean's like moving his head back and forth. No, they have to make it all the way. That's the only way the Texans can get another game at NRG Stadium. And that would be amazing if that actually happened. But the crowd, if this was your swan song for this season, hell yeah to you. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Rank him. C.J. Stroud is the blank best quarterback in the NFL. You answer that next. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.com. Tiger Friendly Radio.
About an hour ago, we had an incident where one of the employees stuck their arm through the cage and a tiger tore her arm off. I can give you your money back or I can give you a rain check.